Boker Tov, good morning everybody. I hope everybody is well. Thank you for coming. It's a special, unusual treat and privilege to have my wife here in the shir as well. Sarah's here. So I better be on good form today and behave well as well. So after a number of weeks talking about Mashiach and Olam Haba, I think we need to bring ourselves back down to earth again. Although you'll see that there's a segue from one of the sources we learned a couple of weeks ago into this topic as well, which I mentioned when we were going through it. Because I want to talk today about a topic we haven't dealt with for many, many, many years, which is, people feel very strongly about this in many different directions, which is mixed seating at weddings. When I say mixed seating, I mean men and women together. There are strong feelings, as I said, on this particular topic. I've started with some questions, obviously, and there are a few shirim on this that I've referred to in the footnote. Davening in a shul requires separate seating with a mechitza. Although, interestingly, there was a minhag in England for many years, I don't know if they still do it, at a chasna, when they have the men and the women on different sides of the shul before the chuppah, many times they would daven mincha without a mechitza down the middle, which is interesting. I don't know if they still do that, but that's not for now. But mechitza is a topic that we talked about, and I referred you to the shirim. But does this apply to other events in a shul? Let's say there's a shir in a shul. Is that relevant to a shir as well? Do you have to have separate seating? What about a sudas mitzvah, a wedding, a bar mitzvah, etc.? What about a regular dinner, like, or a concert, or anything like that? What are the halachas that relate to separate seating, mixed seating? This is what I want to deal with today. So I just want to start, before we get into the sources, there's a lot to get through, with thanking the sponsor, the shirim for the whole of 2022, sponsored by an anonymous sponsor in honor of and for an aliyah for the neshamas of Brana Bat Bendit and Zelig Ben Kalman. So it should be an aliyah for their neshamas. Thank you for the sponsorships. If I could remind you, please, to turn your phones off. Masks on, phones off. That's the protocol. You have to have your phone off even when you're eating. And I would encourage those who are on Zoom, please come and join us. Baruch Hashem, people are beginning to come out. The weather is nicer, and we will be happy to see you. Okay, let's get into this. What are the precedents for whether we should or should not have mixed seating? The two main precedents are, first of all, a precedent for Sukkot and a precedent from Pesach, from ancient times. So let's have a look at this. Let's start off with a discussion of the main topic of this issue, which is Kalas Rosh, Kalut Rosh. Kalut Rosh is people who are behaving in a way which is, you know, flippant or flirty between men and women, banter, that kind of thing. What's the deal with Kalut Rosh? So first of all, the Mishnah refers to this specifically regarding the Beis HaMikdash. Number one, Lo Yakel Adam Es Rosh Keneged Shar HaMizrach. A person can't even have Kalut Rosh facing the eastern gate of the temple. Shehu mechuvan keneged beis kodesh hakodashim, because that leads, that eastern gate, if you could imagine, standing on Har Zeisim, looking down to the eastern gate of the temple, when they opened all the doors so you could see right through to the Kodesh Kodashim. So you can't, you have to even watch how you're behaving, even facing the gate. All the more so in the temple itself, that's clearly a place where Kalas Rosh is completely not allowed. Generally speaking, for tefillah, in a place of tefillah or in an atmosphere of tefillah, Kalas Rosh is a no-no. Look at number two. Tan Rabbanan, Ein Oindim Lehispal, says the Gemara in Brachos, you may not get up to daven, lo mitoch atzvos, if you're depressed or sad. Davening has to be from a place of simcha. Velo mitoch atzlus, or if you're feeling lazy and lethargic. Velo mitoch soik, if you're messing around, laughing. Or if you've been involved in conversations, this is you know, hard. People are schmoozing in shul, schmoozing, and after Yoshev they say, "Oh, you look at that's not the way to do it. You have to somehow prepare a little bit." The loy mitach kalas rosh, and also if a person's in an atmosphere of kalas rosh tefillah, that can't be a place for tefillah. The loy mitach dvarim betelim, and not from any kind of atmosphere of nonsense that you're involved in. Ela mitach simcha shal mitzvah. Tefillah is a little bit like nevuah. The Rambam certainly sees tefillah in the same mechanism as nevuah. And don't forget, the Nevi'im had to get themselves in the mood. Elisha had to ask for musicians to play, to be in simcha shel mitzvah. So maybe they should have mood music in the shul for 5 minutes before mincha, something like that, to get everybody sitting down. But Kalas Rosh, again, is not a place for tefillah. So too in a shul itself, even if you're not davening. Okay, number three. Tan Rabbanan, Gemara and Megillah. Lots of Gemaras to start with. Bate Knesios, shuls, ein noigim behem kalas rosh. You cannot have anything in a shul which is kalas rosh. So that already has interesting questions. Should you hold a quiz evening in a shul? This in a shul, that in a shul, what's kalas? Now, many shuls today, perhaps all shuls, are built al tanai. Al tanai that they can be used as shuls and also as non-shuls. So that may deal with some of the technical issues here. But kalas rosh in a shul, no. Ein oichlim behem, you can't eat in a shul. Ein shosim behem, you can't drink in a shul. Ein liosim behem, you can't make yourself up look nice in a shul. Ein matailim behem, don't go for a tiul to a shul. You can't just go visit a shul, you know, for a tourist attraction. If you go in for a tourist attraction, you should sit, you should say a few tehillim, say a few psukim, learn a little bit of Torah, not just walk in and walk out. You can't run into the shul to shade from the sun or shelter from the rain. You can't give a regular hesped in the shul. It's not a place for a hesped, for a eulogy. But you can learn in a shul, v'shoni behem, and you can learn oral Torah in a shul, obviously. You can have a public hesped for the Rav also. When the Rav of a shul, Rechman al-Islam, if the Rav of a shul passes away, so you have the hesped in the shul, and the coffin comes in the shul, but a regular person not in the shul. So again, kalas rosh not in the shul. Now again, our shuls today are built out tonight. So you can, you know, close off the Aron Kodesh, and you can have dinner in the shul, etc. What were you going to ask? Yeah, this is not the shul hall, this is the shul. This is the sanctuary. Not the shul hall. Number four. Says the Mishnah, however, one time in the Beis HaMikdash, at least one time, they had to deal with a real issue of kalas rosh. Having said this, that you can't have it in the Beis HaMikdash, even facing the Beis HaMikdash, in a shul, in tefillah, on Sukkos was a big balagan. And they had thousands of men, hundreds of thousands of people, the hundreds of thousands of men and women who were all coming to Sukkos, the Chag, to bring korbanos and to see the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, and they had to deal with this. Number four. Says the Mishnah, Misha loy ra Simchas Beis HaShoeva, loy ra Simcha Miyama. Someone who never witnessed the Simchas Beis HaShoeva on Sukkos when they go down at night to get the water from the Shiloach, and they'd have a whole procession as they came up all through the night, so they would do their water pouring, the Beis HaShoeva ceremony in the morning, when they brought the korbanos in the morning. You never saw Simcha if you never saw that. How did it work? But Maitzi Yontzef HaRishon Shel Chag, on Motzei Yom Tov, just after the first day of Sukkos, Yardula Ezras Nashim, everybody went down into the Ezras Nashim, umatkin al sham tikkun gadol, because they made a tikkun gadol there. They did a tikkun gadol. What's the tikkun gadol? Something that worked really well, that fixed up the situation. So the Gemara picks this up in number 5. This is all setting the scene. But Motzei Yom Tov, my tikkun gadol, what was the big thing that they prepared in the Mikdash? Amar Rebbe Elazar, ka'ozeh shashanina, we've taught this elsewhere. Chalaka haita b'rishona. The walls of the Ezras Nashim. Now, just let me just fill you in. I didn't bring you a diagram, but I'm sure that you have a mental image of the temple. Basically, it's a rectangular structure with a kind of T shape with a horizontal hall at the front. And in the rectangular structure, you have the Azara, the Ezras Nashim. Excuse me, at the back, you have the square Ezras Nashim at the back. Then you have an Ezras Yisrael, just a bit further forward. And then you have the Ezras Kohenim, where the Mizbeach is and all of the Shechita happens, etc., etc. And then you have the building itself of the Heichal, which has the T-shape at the front, the building itself and the Kodesh Kedoshim on the far west, moving from east to west. So the Ezras Nashim was a very big area. But unlike a shul today, the Ezras Nashim was not just for women. This is the mistake that people often make. They think the Ezras Nashim was the women and the Ezras Yisrael was the men. Not true. The Ezras Nashim was mixed as an area all through the year. So on Sukkos, they had to work something out because mixing didn't work. So Rebbe Elazar says, originally the walls were smooth. So what did they do? They kifua gazustras, but they created balconies. A ladies' gallery, if you want to call it that. They hit kinu shehayu nashim yoshivas melamala, the anashim melamata. And the women sat upstairs and the men sat below. And the Mephoshim explained they put like wooden pegs into the wall that they then made a platform and they built like bleachers so that the women could sit on the top and the men could sit in the bottom. Tana Rabbani, because it's taught in a braisa. Birishayna, originally they tried the following. Hayu nashim bibifnim, the anashim bibachutz. They tried originally not, you know, changing the architecture, because we'll see that's a big shaila. They had the women at the front for the Beis HaShoeva and the men at the back. But it didn't work. Why? Because the men all pushed through. The men said, we can't see. The women can see. We can't see what's happening. And they all pushed through and everyone was mixed. Hitkinu said, then they made a new takana. Shahayu noshim yoshvis mevuchutz v'anoshim mifneim, that the men sat at the front and the women sat at the back. V'adayin hayu banu l'kalash rosh. And it still didn't work, because all the women pushed through. Everybody pushed everywhere. So that didn't work. Hitkinu said, they made a takana, shahayu noshim yoshvis v'malamala v'anoshim milamata. So in the end, they decided they had to do something drastic, change the architecture, which we'll see in a minute is a shaila, how they do that, and put the women upstairs and the men downstairs. So the Gemara says, heichi oven hachi, how could they even do that? How could they do such a thing? Doesn't it say when David HaMelech is preparing all the plans for the Bet HaMikdash and presenting them to his son Shlomo in Divrei HaYamim, he ends up and he says, Hakol Bichtav, everything is here in writing. This is the plan. Don't change it. Miyad Hashem Elai. It all came to God, from God to me. His skill, Kol Malachot HaTavnit. And I've been made wise to work out all of the architecture for the temple. You can't change it. You can't just make up a new thing in the temple. So Amar Rav. So Rav explains, Kra Ashkechu V'Dorish. They made a drosha. And this is where it links with Mashiach ben Yosef. Remember the story of Mashiach ben Yosef and the Hesped Agadol, the great eulogy that they'll make for Mashiach ben Yosef when he dies. We talked about this a few weeks ago, and they quoted this pasuk: Safta Haaretz Mishpachos Mishpachos Levad Mishpachos Beit David Levad V'Nasheihim Levad. All the families will make this enormous Hesped. Hundreds of thousands of people are giving a eulogy for Mashiach ben Yosef. The men on their own and the women on their own. So they made a drasha. So the rabbi said, Amru. Haloi dvarim kal v'chomer. This is a classic kal v'chomer. Mal asid lavoi she'oiskim behesped. If there's going to be a hesped, which people are sad at. Ve'ein yetzahara sholet behem. And they're going to have less yetzahara. We talked about what that means. Is it the shechting of the yetzahara, which is the same daf of Gemara? Will people be on a higher level? So if in the future, when they're on a higher level and they're at a funeral, we have to still separate the men and the women. Amra Torah, Nashon Levad, V'Nashon Levad, and the Torah says, or here, the Pasuk and Zechariah says, the men and the women are separate. Achshav She'oskim B'Simcha, now that we're dealing with a Simcha on Yom Tov, V'Yetzahara Sholit Behem, and there's lots of Yetzahara around, no shortage, Al Achas Kama V'Kama, how much more so do we need to separate the men and the women? So that gave them the justification for changing the architecture of the Beit HaMikdash, and they had the women upstairs and the men downstairs. Okay. So that was on Sukkos. But how does this play out to other occasions? The rest of the year, they didn't have the women and the men separated. We'll see in a minute whether there were women in all places in the Mikdash. Is there an implication that if you don't have hundreds of thousands of people, then it's fine. People can behave themselves. We're not worried about Kalas Rosh. Or maybe we weren't worried in the temple normally because people are on their best behavior in the temple. Who's going to behave badly in the Beis HaMikdash? But on Sukkos, when there's so many people and they've all had a bit to drink and everybody's going crazy, maybe that was different. So it's not clear. What is this a precedent exactly for? You can't directly say this is a precedent for separate seating at a wedding, because this is the Beis HaMikdash with hundreds of thousands of people. But it's pointing in that direction. I brought you a source here, which when we looked at this 6 or 7 years ago, I didn't bring you this source. There's a Shaila in the Gemara in Kiddushin. There's an interesting episode there when Rabbi Meir died. So Rabbi Yehuda, I think it was Rabbi Yehuda, maybe Rabbi Yoshua, I think it was Rabbi Yehuda, don't remember. He said, I don't want the students of Rabbi Meir to come into my Beis HaMedrash because they ask questions which are ridiculous questions. They just ask questions to try and catch people out. And they tried to shut the doors, no students of Rabbi Meir can come in, but Sumchas, who was one of the students of Rabbi Meir, he found a way to get into the Beis HaMedrash, and he stuck his hand up in the shir, and he said, if a Kohen in the Ezra's Kohenim, it wants to get married to a woman in the Ezra's Kohanim, can he use a piece of sacrificial meat as the Kesef Kiddushin? Yes or no? So Rabbi Yehuda turned around and said, that's exactly the kind of silly question I didn't want to have in the Beis HaMedrash. And he says, Ki Isha Ba'ezras Minai? Why is there a woman getting married in the Beis HaMikdash? Where did a woman come from all of a sudden? So Tosfos jumps in, Tosfos HaRoshi number 6, and says, Perish Rabbeinu Tam, Kalayim Elihid Kadesh. He's asking, how could a woman be there to get married? That's not going to happen. Aval, but Tosfos learned from that, Pamim Shenichneses, women did go to the Beis HaMikdash. It's not that they didn't go there to get married, but they did go there. Kagon Sota, okay, Sota is an unusual case. The Nazira, or a woman who's a Nazira, there may have been thousands of Nazirot. The one they need to bring korbanos le'inyan snufa, they have to wave them, they have to come to the azara. And Tosfos then clarifies, va'afilu sheloy letzorich ein issa im nichneset. And even if there's no specific reason for a woman to go into the Ezra's Yisrael, which is usually the men's area, she can still go. There's no separation intrinsically between the women and the men in the Beis HaMikdash. As it's described in the Ezra's Nashim, was fully mixed. Ditznan, the Meseches Kelim, we learn the Meseches Kelim, Ezra's Kohanim Mekudeshes. The Ezra's Kohanim, where the Kohanim went, has a special Kedusha. She'ein Yisrael Nichnasim Sham Elash V'shas Tzrichim. Tzarcheyem. Okay? That you can only go in there, and a Yisrael man or woman can only go in there when they really need to. Lesmicha, to do smicha on a korban, or shchitza, don't forget, a Yisrael can shech the korban, you don't have to be a kohen to shech. So the Ezra's kohenim was special, you could only go there if you had a special reason. But Tosva says, v'lai katani, but it doesn't say anywhere, Ezra's Yisrael mekudeshes me'ezra's nashim. It doesn't say anywhere that the men's courtyard was more kaddish than the women's courtyard, she'ein nashim nichnesa sham ela letzarech, that women could only go there when they needed. It doesn't say that at all. Alma, it must be the leke surah that there's no problem at all. But it does say, why would a woman be in the Ezra's Kohanim? It wasn't often that they went in. Occasionally they went in. As we find with shuls, this was a Gemara just now in Daf Yomi. If you have nails and you cut your nails, the halacha says you're not allowed to throw them around. You have to put them in a place where they're not going to get out. You have to bury them or flush them down the bathroom, whatever. But in a shul, it says, there's no concern. You can let your nails fly around. What's the concern? Because the Gemara says a pregnant woman might come and stand on a sharp piece of nail. She might get a shock and she might, God forbid, have a miscarriage. But why would a woman be in shul? And therefore, in a shul, not a problem. Could it easily be more cotton? So it's true that there's no reason why a woman can't go to shul, but women don't normally go to shul. I don't know whether that would be true today in the same way. Can you sprinkle your nails around the shul today? What's that? Pregnant women. They made a general takana that women, maybe most women were pregnant then, I don't know. But the fact is that it's clear from here why I'm bringing this source, is that there's no reason why women and men have to separate in the Beis HaMikdash, except on Sukkos, when there was a balagan. And that's an important point which comes out of the sources. Okay. So why did they do the balcony? What was the impetus? Was it so the men and the women didn't mingle? Kalas Rosh sounds like people mixing. Or was it so they couldn't see each other? Was it the looking, or was it mingling that was the problem? And this is going to be relevant to our questions of what to do at a simcha, etc. So let's go on. Number 7. The Mishnah says in Midas. We saw before the Beis HaMikdash was used to be smooth on the wall, and Midot is a Mishnayos that go through all of the measures of how the Beis HaMikdash was created. The Chalakah Haitza B'Rishonei, it originally was smooth. They Kifu B'Gesustra, they put a Kesustra around it. She'anashim Ro'es Melamata, the women could see from above, Anashim Melamata, and the men from below. And he gives a reason. Kedei Shelo Yamu Ravim. No mixing. It was the mixing that was a problem. Maybe the men could see the women in the balcony? Not a problem. They can't mix, though. That's the main problem. The Rambam passes that way. Number 8. Ketzad hayo oisim. What did they do? Erev yom tefrishin on erev chag. Hayo metakrim b'mikdash makam l'nashim l'malah v'l'nashim l'mata. Kedei shelo yitarvu. So that they wouldn't mix. Elu im elu. Again, clearly, it's mixing. The Meiri says the same thing. Number 9. Samchu bo b'binyan arai. They put a temporary structure up. Ligdor pritzut. To stop pritzut. Inappropriate mixing with women and men, which is the opposite of sniyut. Shalala hakel roish lahamid anashim v'anashim be'irbuvia. Irbuvia. We don't want them in a big mix. However, the Rambam on the Perush of Mishnah gives a different reason. Number 10. Shahayu machine makom l'anashim u'makim gadol l'anashim. They put the men and the women in different places. U'makam anashim l'mala ala makam anashim gavoh mimena. The women were above the men. Kedei shelo yistaklu ha'anashim b'anashim. Interesting. The Rambam there says, so the people wouldn't look. That's a different reason. They might be able to see each other, according to the first opinion, as long as they can't mingle. But the Rambam says, no, it's so that they go look. And the Tosafos Yonsos follows this position. It has a very extreme presentation. In number 11, Perush HaRambam, Kidei Shelo Yistaklu, Hanashim Benashim, V'Hadini Mor. I think this is the halacha. It's because of looking, not because of separating. Ki Hanashim Shelemata, Hayoroim B'Simcha, V'Loi HaSmechim B'Atzman. The men could see all the performances, but they couldn't see the other spectators. V'Amnam, indeed, Histaklus Hanashim Benashim, Mevili Dei Kalas Rosh, and it's the looking that brings men to Kalas Rosh. When the men can see the women, they'll behave badly even if they're not mixing with them. Interesting. And then he says, because of Yetzer Hara is very strong, Ki Vahu Yim Shal Bach, that's the posik with Kain, that the Yetzer Hara is is got its grips on you. They may become sexually aroused. They may even have a seminal emission in the base of Mikdash. Sounds quite extreme. Sounds very extreme. But this is, he says, the looking that's the problem. Now, is that because the men never saw women, and therefore the sight of women? That seems hard to understand. This debate, whether it's about mingling or seeing, feeds into the mechitza question, which we're not dealing with today, which is, what kind of a mechitza do you need in your shul? Do you have to have a mechitza which separates people, but it's fine if they can see each other? Or do you have to have a mechitza which not only separates, but also blocks off any view? And you see different psakim based on these two issues. Some shuls have a bulletproof mechitza, that you can't see anything through it. The women can't see, the men can't see, no one can see. Sometimes the women are in a different room, or in a top with a little hole in the floor, or something like that. And in other shuls, you go to other shuls which are good from Orthodox shuls, and the women are behind a glass mechitza. You go to Lincoln Square Synagogue in New York, it's a beautiful new shul. The women are raised on a platform, and there's a glass mechitza, so the women are separate from the men, they can't mingle. But it's very visible, everybody's very engaged, the men can see the women can see the men, but it's separate. So that's part of this whole debate that goes into the mechitza debate. You see where it's coming from here. But in any event, whether it was mingling or seeing, Kalis Roish clearly was a major deal. So that's one precedent. How far does that impact on shiurim today, simchas today, weddings today, bar mitzvahs today? Does it or doesn't it? We can see whether the Mephoshim take that on. Okay, that's the first idea. The second, page number 3. There's a Pesach precedent. This is much more private. If you remember that everybody had to register to eat a Korban Pesach, and you couldn't change groups. You had to be in your group, stick to your group, and only after the Korban Pesach could you then go out and, you know, mix on the roof and sing Hallel. That's one of the origins of us opening the door after the Afikoman. It's not just to let Eliyahu Navi in. It may not be to let Eliyahu Navi in at all, actually, because it's so we can say Shvach HaMaschal HaGoyim. It's so we can say Salel Shimurim. We don't care if the doors are open. We're not worried about anything. But it's also because this was the point in the Seder, in the time of the Mikdash, when they used to throw open the doors and go onto the roofs to sing, because the rules of being registered and sticking with your Korban Pesach no longer apply, because they'd finished the Korban Pesach. Were men and women mixed together at the Korban Pesach? Absolutely. There's a Mishnah, number 12. The Hakala, if you're a Kala, a new bride on Pesach, Hofechet et paneha, she turns away her face, Vaochelet, and she eats like that. The Chiddush being that she can even face away from the group and eat, and it's not considered being detached from the group. Why is she facing away? So says the Gemara, number 13, Hakala Hofechet et paneha, my time, what's the reason? Amar Reb Chiya bar Abba, Amar Reb Yochanan, Mipnei Shehi Bosha, because she's embarrassed. Why is she embarrassed? Says Rashi, le'echol le'eini ha'nashim. She's embarrassed to eat with all the men. Al yedei she'mistaklim ba, because everybody's looking at her. Because she's a kala. Everybody wants to look at the kala, to wish her mazel tov. Doesn't she look nice? And then, what a simcha. But no one has a problem with them being together. It's not a husband looking at her. This is other men looking at her. Maybe from her family, maybe not from her family. It doesn't say you have to have Korban Pesach with your immediate family. You could have Korban Pesach with your neighbors, with your friends. But the men and the women obviously are eating together. Now, is that a precedent for today? You could say, oh no, people are eating kodshim in Yerushalayim, then they have a lot of yira, there's going to be no kalas rosh when people are eating their Korban Pesach. You can't say that about a wedding, or can you? How far you take these precedents, we'll see as we go through in the Mephoshim a little bit later on. Fine, so they're the two major precedents. The Sukkos precedents from the Shimchas Pesach Shu'eva, and the Pesach precedent from the Korban Pesach. Okay, let's go forward in time now. The Gaonim. The Gaonim wrote a lot of tshuvas, and already from the time of the Gaonim, you see a theme coming through that they don't like the idea of men and women being seated together at weddings. We're not talking about mixed dancing. Mixed dancing is a whole different business. Okay, that's clearly not allowed because of Shemini Gear issues and obviously Kalas Rosh issues. Just mixed seating, is there a problem?
We're talking about at the meal.
At the meal. At the meal. We're not talking about the... We'll see explicitly, this says, talks about the Suda here. Rav Avadia later talks about the Chuppah. It's interesting. Is there more of a reason to separate at the Chuppah or less of a reason to separate at the Chuppah? You can see it both ways. On the one hand, the chuppah is a formal occasion. Nobody's drinking, nobody's eating, everybody's sitting well-behaved, looking at the chuppah. In theory, everyone's talking at the back. But you would have thought, well, there's got to be no kalas rosh at the chuppah. Everybody's watching, saying amen. But at the dinner, you know, everything's more mixed. Or do you say that chuppah is more like of a religious ceremony? You have to have separate seating at the chuppah, and the dinner's a dinner. You can read it both ways in many ways. But look at what the Gaonim say. Number 14. Say in the Oitzah Gaonim the following. The case where people go in together to a Beis HaMishteh, which is a wedding, it's interesting, what is a Gemilus Chasadim? Like a fundraiser, a fundraising chesed meal, and they eat at the Suda, Anashim im Hanashim Me'urvavim. And they eat the men and the women together. Is they don't eat the men and the women. The men and the women, the men and the women eat together. Yes, sorry, my syntax was misleading. Okay. No yeshivish syntax allowed. Okay. Kach Hamaisa, this is what you should do, say the Gaonim. Im bizman shehan nashim yoshvos ka'achat bifnei atzmam, if you have the women sitting on their own, v'ha'an nashim bifnei atzmam, and the men sitting on their own, mutarim, that's fine. Amanash shaloi yimzgo anashim lanashim, v'nashim lanashim, as long as they don't pour drinks for each other. That's too intimate, pouring wine for each other. They have to sit separately and do their own thing separately. V'chein v'chiluk hamanos, v'haparparios, and also sharing food. We don't want any men and the women sharing food. You can have my beef and I'll take your chicken and all that. Everyone has to be separate. But a suda with the men and the women together is asur. Asurim. The hanashim va'anashim, the men and the women, you may not, as a man, be at dinner with another woman, apart from your sister, the achos aviv, and your aunt, the achos imor, on your father's or your mother's side, the achas ishtoi, or your wife's sister, your sister-in-law, and even then amanasha tehei ishtoi besuda, and only then if your wife's with you, shehima shamartoi, because she's looking after you min ha'aveira to stop anything inappropriate going on with your what's this talking about? This doesn't sound like it's talking about a private home. This is talking about more of a public gathering, but I don't know. It's a good question. But you see, already from the time of the Gaonim, there is a serious concern here coming out of the Gaonim that the men and the women shouldn't be seated together. A man can be with his nearest relatives, but as long as his wife's with him to make sure that he doesn't misbehave. Okay. Yeah, that's why my wife's here, to make sure that I don't misbehave in a mixed gathering. The Rishonim, and it's actually very interesting. I spoke to a Rav yesterday. He asked me, what are you speaking about tomorrow? And I said, mixed seating. And he said, it's like it's a minority opinion that men and women have to be separate. And I said, well, not really. We'll see where the mixed shita comes from in a minute. But the theme going through the Gaonim and the Rishonim seems to be pretty clear that men and women have to be separately seated at these things. But I'm not paskening halacha, and we've got a long way to go. Let's have a look in the Rishonim. So the Sefer HaParades, one of the interesting points here is you'll know that none of these Rishonim are the usual key, people that we look at. The Rambam doesn't talk about this directly, and the Rosh, and the Rif. We're going to slightly unusual Rishonim. The Sefer HaParades, what's the Sefer HaParades? Ever come across this Sefer? It's a Sefer written in the Bet Midrash of Rashi. Maybe Rashi's Torah was in it, his Talmidim put it together, an Ashkenaz Sefer. So we'll see that the Ashkenazim are the main voices here. Number 15 says the Sefer HaParades: Asalis Arid Benashim Im Anashim Bein Besuuda Bein Bechol Inyan. I don't care if it's a meal. I don't care if you're sitting at a show. I don't care if you're sitting at a concert or anything. You can't have men and women together. El Anashim Levad VaHaAnashim Levad Mikal VaChomer Ma'im Ba'Oynes HaAvil. And he brings the whole the Kal VaChomer with the Hesped HaGadol in Yerushalayim. If that already is separate, Hamishteh Vaschoik Al Achas Kama VaKamen Bipnei SheYetzahara Mitkarim Ba. Okay, we've seen this. So too, the most famous source on this is the Sefer Chassidim. Who wrote the Sefer Chassidim? The Sefer Chassidim was written by Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, who was one of the Pietist school. There was a German Chassidim school in the 12th, 13th century, which was a little bit of a reaction against the French Tosafist school, which was very dialectic, in the way very very creative in halacha, etc. There was something of a breakaway school who were actually descended from the original Ashkenaz colonimus families that settled those German areas in Mainz and Speyer in Worms, and they took a much more ascetic position and said a lot more Musa, and Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid wrote the Sefer Chassidim. The other famous thing that was written by them that you read every week is Anim Zmirot. Anim Zmirot on Shabbos morning, but was written by Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's father, Rabbi Shmuel HaChassid. And if you actually analyze the Anim Zmirot, you'll see that it's a very deeply Kabbalistic work, a deeply poem. These people weren't Mekubalim. They were coming from a place of Kabbalah. So the Sefer Chassidim was written, it says the following, number 16. If you want to be at a wedding and say the bracha that God is rejoicing in his heavens, you have to check. Im kiyamu, did you fulfill the requirement of the gilu barada? What's the gilu barada? Gilu, says the pasuk in Tehillim, you have to rejoice, barada, the trembling. You have to have a yira shamayim together with your simchas. Your Avas Hashem and your Simchas Achaim. By the way, just in parentheses, today is Shushan Purim Cotton, as you know. The last simon in Shulchan Aruch and Orach Chaim deals with the halachas of Purim Cotton, the 2 days of Purim Cotton. And the Ramah ends up on he has the last word in Orach Chaim on Shulchan Aruch, where he says, is there a din of simcha, special simcha, eating a special meal, being besimcha on Purim Cotton? He says, it's up to you. Some people do, some people don't. But he ends, v'tov leiv mishteh tamid. But someone with a good heart is always mishteh, is always celebrating, is always besimcha. It's a good thing to be besimcha. But they compare that with the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch, where the Ramah writes, Shvisi Hashem lenegdi tamid. I've placed you in Yerushamayim before me always. And they call these the two tamidim of the Shnei Tamidim Kehilchatan, which is in the Pasha, the Korban Tamid. The two tamidim of the Ramah. Shvisi Hashem lenegdi tamid, which is Yerushamayim. And at the end, Vatoglev Mishke tamid. That someone who is always besimcha, that's always a good thing. So this is this idea. It has to be a balance. It has to be Gila Bara'ada. You have to be besimcha, but with Yerushamayim. Imra Adaba Makam Gila, do you have Yerushamayim where you're celebrating? Aval. Im Lokeach Adam Isha She'enu Hagila. He gives you a list of weddings not to go to. If a man marries a woman that's not a good woman, or he lokachad ish She'enu Hagon, or she marries, she's a good girl, but she marries a really bad guy, or Shnehim Einu Hagon, or they're both from a bad place, or Ein Tarabusham, but or there's no culture with them, the Nivul Peb in Nehem, and they're all swearing and talking in a vulgar way. Or Nashim Yoshua's been our Nashim, or the women are sitting with the men. The Shehirhurim Sham. And there are Hirhurim there. Hirhurim means inappropriate thoughts. Now, what's the Sheh? The Sheh means that, and there will always be Hirhurim if you put the men and the women together, or in a place where there are Hirhurim, I think it's that there will be Hirhurim. Loi techen avarek Shehasimcha b'mano, a very famous psak, you cannot say Shehasimcha b'mano. If you're going to bench, you have to leave that out. Because God is not celebrating at this wedding. Call mitzvah hababa aveira al yada, any mitzvah that you do by doing an aveira in the same process, mutzav shelo yasa mitzvah, but you should never do the mitzvah. So you can't say that you're davening, you're saying shah simcha, but I know, come on, mitzvah, the samecha chasam, you want to do mitzvah simchas chasam v'kala, you can't do it with men and women together. The im yesh pritzim, the yodeh shebeloi pritzis lo yehe, if you know that there's going to be preetzes, and without the preetzes, it's not going to even happen, or ena yochel liyos b'loy hirur, or ena yochel liyos b'loyos b'nashim, or you can't stop yourself thinking or looking at women, al yesham, don't go to such a wedding. Preetzes is the opposite of sneers. Whatever sneers is, preetzes is the opposite. Literally, preetzes means to break through, to break down barriers. Okay? So that's a psak that we'll see makes it through into the mainstream. That you can't say, according to the Shita, Shasimcha b'ma'ayna, at a wedding where there is mixed seating. The Sefer Chassidim is brought down in number 17 by the Sefer Minhagim, which is again a 14th, 15th century Ashkenazi Sefer, which is recording the Minhagim of Ashkenaz, the same psak. Number 18, also the Orcha Sadikim, the same idea. We don't know who wrote the Orcha Sadikim, it's an anonymous author. You must be very careful that you talk appropriately at a wedding. Because again, people are drinking. People sometimes lose their inhibitions. Such a simcha is awful. It's anger and the wrath of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a simcha like that. The lois simchas anashim vanashim yachdav, and not have men and women together. Kizois a simcha he kalas rosh. It's all automatically going to be kalas rosh. Va'afilu b'shasa hesped. Even when there's a hesped, etc., they even say that. Okay, fine. These are all rishonim, but as I said, they're not mainstream rishonim. They're not the rosh, the riff, the Rambam. They're the Sefer Paradise, the Sefer Hasidim, the Sefer Minhagim, the Orchas Sadikim. How does this filter into the Shulchan Aruch? Like, what's the bottom line? So interestingly, the Shulchan Aruch never mentions explicitly that you have to have separate seating at a wedding. He never says that. He does, however, have a halacha in Yontif, which the Mefarshim say applies outside Yontif as well, in number 19. Chayavim based in Lahamid Shoitrim Beregalim. The Beistin has to appoint policemen on the festivals. What do the policemen do? Patrols. Shahayu Meshoitetin Umechapsim Beginois of a Paradisim. That they go on patrol, checking out the orchards, checking out the fields and the forests. The Alanaris and down by the riverbank. Shaloi Yis Kapsu Sham Le'echol Velishtois Anashim Vanashim. That there are no men and women sitting there eating together. Even by the river, no picnics. Nothing in the forests, nothing in the orchards. For Yavadu de Averon, they'll end up doing Averas. It sounds from this that he wouldn't be too pleased about mixed seating at a simcha. V'chein yazhiru b'davazel achala am, and they should tell everybody this is not appropriate. Shelo yisarvu anashim v'anashim, but b'beiseim, people shouldn't mix in their houses. B'simcha the simcha, v'lo yimshichu b'yayin, they shouldn't be drinking wine together. Shem yavadu de Averon, people are going to do Averas. Eleyu kulam kadoshim. Everybody should be a kadosh. Everybody should be sanctified and holy, and not have the mixing. And the Mishnah Berurah says this doesn't only apply in Yontif, and the Kafah Chaim says also this doesn't only apply in Yontif. It's just on Yontif it's a particular problem. Yeah, the whole Tashlich down by the riverbank. Everybody gets to meet the Chosan and Kala down at Tashlich. The Vilna Gaon would not send his daughter to Tashlich because of this reason. He told her she couldn't go because there were boys there as well. See, nothing changes. Even in Vilna, 250 years ago, this was something which was a problem as well. Rav Shlomo Luria, in Poland, Achronim, picks this up and says, I can tell you from bitter experience, this is a big problem. 21. Uberoiv Mekaimus, in many places, Hachasam v'hashushvinim oichlim b'bais echad. He's in the 1600s in Poland. The Chas, and this is not Hasidim. This is pre-Hasidus. Okay, the Chosan and his friends eat in one house. The Hakala im Ashushvinim b'beis acher, and the Kala with her friends in another house. The Gamba sefer Chasidim, and he brings that sefer Chasidim. Chasav she'ein levarich she'asimcha b'ma'oino heken she'oishvim anashim anashim b'cheda echad. Ki hasatan makatreg. The Satan is winding them all up. Ve'ein simcha lifnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu. And then he says va'ani hagever. I can personally testify. Hashera oni imi. I've seen the poverty of my people. Shekama kil kulim ba'umizeh. How many things went wrong with this? How many mistakes were made? Umikol makom minag yafa. But it is a nice idea. Kishemavarachim birkas chasanim. That when they're making the sheva brachas, dahinu kol zayin brachas at the simcha, the suda, shemolichim akale b'mokom achasan. You can bring the kala in. That I will allow. That's nice. Because at the end of the day, the Sheva Brachas are for the Chosan and Kala. Samecha Chosan ima Kala. So without a Kala there, he says, I agree, the Sheva Brachas is a bit strange without a Kala there, but just bring her in for the Sheva Brachas. The Zayin Brachas al Ika hazibug, because the Sheva Brachas are on the couple. The Chibur, Nitzkana, and they were made, that the Takana of Sheva Brachas was on the couple. Im Kein Roi Levarich Hashem. You should make Brach with both of them together. Okay? Fine. Now, so far, you're probably wondering, I didn't think Rabbi Manning was going to give this kind of shir, you know, and tell us that every sort says you have to have separate seating at weddings, separate seating here. I'm just saying it how it is. Up until now, that's what everybody said. But this next source is the one that is going to open up the field to a different approach.
Too bad.
Yes, the women danced, the men, they were...
Supposed to be for the men to be able to find their color.
Good, not only too bad, maybe they did that on Yom Kippur as well. Good, so you could say there, number one, that they weren't mixing. The women were dancing and the men were standing, you know, around looking for a color. And looking for a color is the one situation where you are allowed to look at women because you want to work out who you want to go out with, no?
Yeah, but you're not supposed to do it just by looks alone.
No, but you know what the Gemara says there, that the women who were rich would be singing, marry a rich girl, that's what you need. And the women who were good looking would be saying, marry a good looking girl, that's what you need. And the women who were not rich and not good looking were saying, it's a mitzvah, marry me anyway. You know, you have to say how it is. Yes.
Isn't that why they borrow each other's...
Yes, yeah, so they didn't feel embarrassed, etc. So they didn't want to start with inequality. Yes.
Nowadays, there's a lot of them have bachelor's parties, you know, the men pass it out.
Right.
That's the separate, you know. Separate
what happens at bachelor's parties is not, I think, what the Maréchal was talking about. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, and yeah, of course, the bad behaviour of the guys would be obviously also. But it's even worse when the girls are there. Okay, let's have a look at the Lavush. The Lavush opens up the field. Who is the Lavush? Rav Mordechai Yaffe. And he lived in, late 16th century Poland. He says a very interesting thing, number 22. He's a very important post-Shulchan Aruch anthology of Halacha, big posek. He says number 22. Amru b'sefer chasidim. He quotes the sefer chasidim. Kol makom she'anashim v'nashim ro'in zeh zeh k'goyim b'sudas nisuin ein levarach she'asimcha b'ma'ayna. He brings the psak down that you can't have proper sheva brachas if the men and women are mixed. L'fi she'ein simcha l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu k'sheyesh bo hihurim aveira. Ad kan. That's the quote of the sefer chasidim. And then he says the ein nizharin achshav b'zeh. But we are not concerned about this anymore. We have mixed seating, and we do say she'asimcha b'ma'ayna. The efshen, it could be mishum because the achshav Muragalois anashim harbe ben anashim. We're very used to mixing with women nowadays. The ein kan hirhuri aveira kol kach. Therefore, it doesn't affect us as much. And there, maybe in Germany in the 13th century, it was incredibly pietist and separate. But already in Poland in the 17th century, 1600s, then it's not such a big deal. The damiam alan kekaki chivuri. They seem to us like white geese. So if we have white geese, we'll get to white geese in a minute. Mitoch roiv hergalam beinenu, because we're so used to mixing. The kevon, the dashu, and since people have already started doing this, dashu, we don't have to change it back again. This is our minhag here. Don't mess with our minhag. We have seating together at weddings. So this is an interesting argument. He's basically arguing that habituation is a halachic factor. If men and women are used to being together, there'll be a lot less problems. Maybe the problems will be even bigger if you separate them so much. If you don't let men see any women or any pictures of women, then you're almost making the problem worse. Shouldn't a man and a woman be able to have a normal interaction without it becoming a sexualized encounter? That's what he's saying. And we can do this. It's not a problem. Even at a simcha, even with the wine flowing, it's okay, which is very interesting. What's with these white geese? So there are a few Gemaras that indicate that this is a potential halachic factor, but it's a dangerous one, and you have to use it very carefully. Let me give you a couple of examples. Number 23. Rav Gidl is the brachas, Gemara in brachas. Rav Gidl have a ragil, they have a ka'azil, v'yasif, ashari, d'tfila. He would sit next to the mikveh in the evenings when the women were coming to mikveh, and he would explain to the women how what to do. The Amal, who he'd say to the women, Hachitavilu, Hachitavilu. This is how you go to the mikveh, this is how you make the bracha, this is the way to do it. He was giving them pre-mikveh prep before they went to the mikveh. So Amri Leid Ravana, the rabbi said to him, you're not worried about Yetzahara? You know, all these women, you're chatting to them as they're about to go to the mikveh? So Amal, he said to them, Damien ba'apai kikaki chibir. They're like white geese. White geese. Geese. Like birds, they're just like, it's nice, it's like a bird watching encounter, you know, not, no pun intended. It's fine. It doesn't affect me. Okay, that's the end of the conversation. The rabbis obviously thought it was a bit strange, but he said, in my case, it's not a problem. Yes. I don't know. To us, we've had too many bad experiences that this doesn't resonate well with us today. Okay? And I wouldn't advise it to anybody. But there's no reason why. I mean, if a woman asked a Shaila that I need to go to the mikveh and this, there's no reason the Rav shouldn't know that she's going to the mikveh. So, I mean, by definition, that when you ask a Shaila about the mikveh, the Rav knows when you're going to the mikveh. I agree. Even at the time, the Rabbanim was saying, this is a question here, how this works. Have a look here. Just go forward to 25. Another example. Rav Acha Markiv La Kasve Umarakid. Rav Acha would lift the kala on his shoulders and would dance around the room. Now, some of the Mephoshim say he was on a chair. He was a very strong guy. He would carry on the chair around the room. So Amri Le Rabbanon. So the rabbi said to him, Anam Le'er, Anam, for us, Mauli Amid Hachi, can we do this? Can we do this as well? There was a critique. They were saying, would you be happy if we did this? What are you doing? Dancing around with a kala on your shoulders? So he said to the rabbis, if you feel like it's just a beam sitting on your shoulder, then go ahead. And if you don't, then don't go ahead. When I carry the kala, it's like me just carrying a big sack of rice on my shoulders. And it doesn't bother me at all. So again, you've got somebody who is saying, this doesn't bother me, this doesn't affect me, and therefore it's not a problem. And the other rabbi is saying, yeah, but still, how can it not affect you? So do you draw any conclusions from these Gemaras? These are the Gedolim of the generation. Can you conclude, well, if it's okay for them, it's okay for me? Or on the contrary, even the rabbis at the time were questioning whether this was okay. By the way, this is one of the origins of the mitzvah tans, where the Rebbe comes in with a gartel or whatever, and they do the... This Gemara, where it says that Rav Acha would pick up the kala and dance on the chair with the kala. We don't dance with the chair, but the mitzvah tans, the kala usually looks scared stiff with the mitzvah tans, the pictures I've seen. But nevertheless, that's how this seems to work. But you have, for example, look at the Shulchan Aruch number 26, the Shulchan Aruch in Evan HaEzer says, Sarich Adam Lizrachim Anoshim Ma'od Ma'od. Men should stay well away from women. It's a bad idea for men and women to be together. The Asali Kreis B'Yadav, and all the flirting halachas. He can't click with his fingers or Baraglav or indicate with his feet, really reminds me, ain't have a wink with his eyes, Le'echad may arise to any woman that he's not allowed to be with. All of these rabbinic prohibitions that would lead somebody to something which is worse. The Asali Schaikim, you can't mess around and play about, the Hakel Barosh, Hakel Rosho Kenegda, all a habit be of you to look at her beauty. The Hamiskamin, La'echa, Me'elu, Hadvarin, Makin, Osa, Lachas, Maras, these are all Isserei Durabonim. And then he goes in the next paragraph, Osa, Osa, Lishdamesh, Be'isha, Klal, you can't have a woman serve you at all. Ben Gedola, whether she's a grown up, Ben Katana, whether she's a girl, Ben Shifcha, whether she's a maidservant, Ben Meshuchereris, whether she's a free woman, Shemayab, Lidei, Hiruhu, Ravera, because you might start thinking bad things when this woman is serving you. Be'ez, Shimash, Amra, what are we talking about? Intimate, personal service. Rechitzas Panav, washing his face. This is not talking about a person who's sick and who has a nurse caring for him. It's talking about a man who has servants and, wash my face, wash my arms, wash my legs. Yada varagla. Afilu litzok bo maim, even to pour water for him. In the lirchots, into the bath. Panavala varagla varagla, even to bathe his hands and feet. Afilu einan ogas, but even if she doesn't touch him. There's an intimacy there. It's not appropriate, he says. Va'asas amita b'fanav, she can't make his bed. It's not talking about a wife, it's talking about a maid. She can't make his bed in front of him. Umazigas akoy, she can't pour his wine in front of him. Comes in the Ramah. The yesh aimrim bekol she'eino oise derech chiba rak kavanaso l'shem shamayim muta. But we actually don't have such a problem with this. As long as you're doing it l'shem shamayim, as long as you know that it's not inappropriate, it's fine. L'chein nagu l'hakel b'dvarim eilu. We in Ashkenaz don't have a problem with any of these things. Interesting. You trust somebody that he's going to be l'shem shamayim? Evidently you do trust people. And the Ritzvah has a very interesting formulation, which is brought down in the Piskei Tshuva. Look at what the Ritzvah says in 27. The Ritzvah says, "Velez the Piskei Tshuva, v'zeh loshon ha-Ritzvah, soif kiddushin." This is the loshon of the Ritzvah at the end of kiddushin. Hakol lefi das v'yirah shamayim. Everything depends on your self-awareness, your yirah shamayim, v'chein hilchus, and that's the halacha. You have to know what you can and can't do. If you have to know that if you sit next to a woman at a dinner, is that going to affect you? Is it not going to affect you? If it's not going to affect you, then fine. It's not going to bring anything negative up in your heart. Then you're allowed to look at a woman. To speak with a woman, even if she's a woman, you wouldn't be able to have a relationship. All those halakas that you can't ask, how is your wife? It all depends on the context. If you know that that's not an issue in your society, for you, in your personal awareness, it's fine. V'hainu ha'hid Rabbi Yochanan Yosef Asharah depicted tefillah. He has a Gemara there, Rabbi Yochanan, he says, was sitting by the mikveh. For Adabar Abba, the Nakad Kala Akasvei, and the other Rav, Rav Acha, they put the Kala on his shoulders. For Rakidbar, and he danced with her on his shoulders. And the reason he wasn't concerned is because he knew it was okay for him. But if you're going to carry the kala, you have to be a chassid gadol. Okay? But he says, at the end of the day, there is an element of self-awareness. And Rav Avadia raises this interestingly in the issue of kol isha. Somebody asked him, he says, I don't get affected by women's voices anymore, or at all. I can go to the opera, I can go to hear a woman singing. It doesn't do anything for me. So is that okay then, based on this argument? Interesting question. So Rabbi Avadia answers as follows. He says, just be very careful. He says, number 28. Don't allow your mind to trick you to saying, the hashta that nowadays, chashivi keregilim b'kol nashim. We're used to listening to women's voices. We're not affected by it. Don't be so quick. Rabbeinu Chananel says that if you're used to a woman's voice, then that's okay. But there he's talking about her speaking voice, not her singing voice. You can't tell me that you are habituated to women singing. We can't just make this stuff up. Kol Isha is prohibited. You can't turn around and say, well, that doesn't affect me. Think about it, that's not how we deal with these halachas. Show me the gear. Oh, I'm only attracted to tall women, so it's not a problem for me to touch small women. Mazel! That's not how you don't play those kind of games. Make things up as you go along. If it's asr, it's asr. Kosher einu mufurish b'shasha poskim. Unless it's absolutely clear in the poskim. And he says, yes, I know the lavush. Don't throw the lavush at me. Hein emesh shereisi halavush. I've seen the lavush, it says about the mixed seating. We call Markham Ein Kolani Donim Shavim, but not every case is the same. The Yesh L'Chalek Bein Hanosim. You have to separate. Kol Isha, no. Mixed seating, okay, if that's your minhag, fine. By the way, there's a very interesting discussion that's happened over the years. Rav Moshe Lichtenstein wrote a very important piece on this. What about Kol Isha in a setting where it's clearly not sexual in any way, and it's going to create a Chilol Hashem if you leave? And he's talking about an IDF ceremony. Let's say it's a Yom HaZikaron, and they call up a woman soldier, and she sings HaTikvah. And all the religious soldiers run out, because they can't listen to a woman singing. So again, Rav Moshe doesn't say, you don't have to leave. He says, but there's a big question there. Is that really called Isha? In that context, in that way? And if there is a question, does that question warrant the Chilul Hashem, which is caused by the religious soldiers leaving? He doesn't conclude, but he raises it as a question. And there you can see why that is a grey area.
There have been many instances where the Rabbanim HaRashiim over the years have been present at ceremonies where women sang.
Interesting.
They never got up.
Maybe they had earplugs.
I don't know.
But yeah, you're right. You're right. Rabbanim Rashi'im have all sorts of interesting things. There's many. We talk about going into churches. The English chief rabbis have a long and distinguished, or not distinguished, depending on how you look at it, minhag of going into churches for church ceremonies as well. So whatever. Whether you can bring halachas from the chief rabbis is a good question. But I brought you another halacha, number 29, the Shulchan Aruch. Paga Isha B'Shuk. If you bump into a woman, if you see a woman in the shuk, in the public area, asala halechachareya, you may not walk behind her. Ela rax, you have to run. Or masalka let stadim, you have to run to the other side of the road. Or lacharav, you have to run backwards. You can't be walking behind a woman. So I brought you two psakim, the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Shlomo Zalman, both of whom say, that doesn't really apply today.
It says masalka, I think it's push the woman.
No, I don't think he means. No, I don't think he's talking about pushing the woman there. Make it so that you're not walking behind her anymore. The Tzitz Eliezer says, "Aval Masha'ein came bisman azeh shemetzias loikain." It's a different metzias. The Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, is not trying to find coolers in these areas. He's just saying it's a different reality. Ela ha'isha einu yoshevish biyar, because they basically women don't sit at home all day anymore. Because men are called them like they used to do. For a gilin yoseberi, yes, isha berachav. You see more women in the street than you see men. Ulachein kalkalatam hatakanatam. And therefore, the fact, maybe I wouldn't have agreed that all the women should go in the street in the first place. But now that they're there, that's a tikkun. Now that we're used to it. De'ein kol kach atachashash hirur. He gives the same svara. People are not so affected by it. It's much more mixed society. Bihalich achreya. When people walk behind a woman. Kifiaz, like they were back in the old days. The arcane hekel hatrumas adesh, and therefore there are kulas. Also, Rav Shlomo Zalman, he says, I'm going to read the whole thing. He says, what does it do? What good does it do to run to the other side of the road now? There are more women on the other side of the road than started on your side of the road. And he said, and what was the svara behind the prohibition? That a man would not have the chutzpah to look inappropriately at a woman in her face, but he might look inappropriately from behind. So if you're behind a woman, then don't do that. He says, today, people have the chutzpah that look at you straight in the face inappropriately. It doesn't apply anymore. Not because we don't have any problems. We have lots of problems. But it's just not applicable. It's not relevant in the metzias that we have. It's a very interesting tshuva as well. Okay, so let's talk about a modern day psak, and let's bring this to a close, and I'll show you something fun at the end. So the Bach, in number 32 and 33, which I'm not going to go through in detail, the Bach raises an interesting question. He says, look, Bekrakow, let's just look at the beginning of number 32. Bekrakow noagim shasuda sha'oisin b'leil beis, the suda, the sheva brachas you make the day after the wedding, yeah, when everyone's a bit exhausted, mevarchin asher bara, they say the sheva brachas, asher bara, sasam v'simcha, etc. V'loi shasimcha m'ma'ona, but they don't say shasimcha m'ma'ona. There's a minhag in Krakow. V'hu teima, it's very surprising. It's surprising because there are halakhically more reasons not to say asher bara than shasimcha b'ma'ona. So he says, why do they do it that way? The loy matzasi shum tam limin hagam. I don't actually know completely why they do this. Ella maybe is lefishi suda zot katana. They're having a small meal straight after the wedding. Umoishvim anashim v'anashim yachad b'cheda echad. And all the men and the women are sitting together. And then he quotes the halacha from the Sefer Chassidim, the Sefer Minhagim, that when the men and the women together, you can't say shah simcha b'ayna. So maybe that's why they do it. Which is interesting because he doesn't say they shouldn't have had the suda. They said they have, this is what they do, they have a suda which is men and women mixed together, and that's why they don't say Shah Simcha B'ba'ina. But he doesn't so cry out that this is an outrage that they have such a suda. Also in the next source, in number 33, he talks about the other Sheva Brachas. He says on Shabbos, they always have separate Sheva Brachas, because on Shabbos, much more people, and therefore they have the Sheva Brachas separate, then they do say Shah Simcha B'ba'ina. But then he says, but in some cases they have own, look at the last line, where it says in the middle of the last line, "Beleil Shabbos or b'Shabbos Shachris, ein soidim l'sham." Okay, b'Krakow, ki im bachurim u'batolot. They have a singles sheva brachas, bachurim u'basulot. The ein boy here hurei aveira, and they don't have as many bad thoughts as the marrieds do. But that's also interesting. Maybe they were kids. I don't know, but it doesn't sound like they were kids. Bachurim u'batolot sounds like they were young men and women. Is there an argument for having more mixing between singles than between marrieds? And there are poskim that will say that today. I think Rav Shechter says, like, you know, you go to, if I'm married, why do I need to sit next to somebody else's wife at a wedding? What does that benefit me? But if you're a single man, a single woman, you're trying to meet people, you know, it's a very, many people met at weddings. You were saying before you met your husband at a wedding. You know, a lot of people meet at weddings. So there's an argument that for the singles, it should be more mixed. But of course, other people would say lehefech, etc. So I brought you a few psakim. Most of the poskim in the last 200 or 300 years, they either bring the Sefer Chassidim, osa, or they bring the Levush that says, okay, but we don't do that anymore because we have a different minhag. And that seems to be how things break down today. There are these two very established minhagim of psak. If you look on the last page, on page 8, there's one approach which is clearly that Sefer seating is absolutely required. Nothing to talk about. I brought you a very charif tshuva from Rav Moshe Sternbuch. Many of his tshuvas are very charif. This one especially. He says in Johannesburg, people have these mixed seating at weddings, and it's completely also. He says, and rabbis go to them as well. And these rabbis are not real rabbis. It's a chilul Hashem to go to a place where he's very, very charif. Okay? Okay, I don't think he's talking about reform rabbis. I think he's talking about rabbis that don't have a problem going to a wedding where there's mixed seating, because which many rabbis would not have a problem. So that's one approach. Clearly, people are very harif about that. I brought you two psakim from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein's an interesting situation. In 1946, he writes in a tshuva that it could be that all gatherings of men and women should be separate. It's a din d'oraisa that you have to have any kibbutz anashim v'anashim separated. And he says maybe that requires even a machitza. But then in 1951, he wrote another tshuva where he says, no, maybe there's no isser in mixed events, but only in a shul where everything has to be separate. And therefore, you've got these two slightly contradictory psakim of Rav Moshe. Some people want to say that Rav Moshe is strict in very unorganized gatherings where there's just mixing, but in more organized places like a wedding, maybe he's less strict. Rav Moshe made a number of weddings for his children, and they had different seating arrangements. In two of his weddings were completely separate. Rav Reuven Feinstein's wedding had some mixed tables, but some for the other side, and mostly separate tables. And Rav Moshe Tendler's wedding was completely separate for the Feinstein side and mixed for the Tendler side. Very interesting. Again, what would Rav Moshe Feinstein have done in 2021? probably different from in 1960. Okay, but it's interesting. Yes, sir.
I have a friend. He's a few years older than me, not much older. He's very close with the Moshe. Grew up on the inside. He's very close with the Moshe. And probably the Moshe told him that he complained that he was not, that nowadays he was normally not able to sit with his wife.
Okay, what did he say?
He said he wished that he could, that people would allow it now.
Oh, Rav Moshe told him?
Moshe told him, but I don't know if he ever said that. I don't think he ever said that publicly.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here. The great revelation, that's the Rav Moshe. We have Adas that Rav Moshe said this. Rav Avadia Yosef also... He said that he knows someone who knew Rav Moshe well, and this person was complaining that he doesn't get to sit next to his wife anymore at weddings because everyone's frummer than they used to be. And apparently Rav Moshe said to this person, yes, I think it's appropriate to allow this more than people do. Okay, whatever. That's an uncorroborated, but nevertheless, a live account. Okay, fine. Just two other things. Rav Avadia Yosef rules that you have to have separate seating, but understands that there's a minhag of the Lavush that is appropriate. You can have mixed seating at a wedding. He doesn't want to interfere with that. He just doesn't want to take it further. Other people feel more strongly that we should have mixed seating. Rav Henkin, interestingly, says that mixed seating is permitted, but should not be encouraged. Interestingly, because you might not have thought that Rav Henkin would have said that, but he did say that. And other people feel very unhappy about separate seating. You know, everybody's too frum these days, etc., etc. People feel very strongly, and I brought you some comments there. I brought you at the end a piece from the East London Gazette. The first and last time that it will ever be brought in a shir, as far as I'm aware. I was given this by a lady who I saw just before, who actually wasn't able to stay, but she gave me this from the 1938, January 8th edition of the East London Gazette, where you hear it says, "Bride forbidden to dance with groom. The strangest wedding for years. Lady guests separated from men." And you can read this on your own. It's actually very interesting. This correspondent there, the staff reporter, was at this wedding of this young man who was in the Tree of Life Seminary, which is Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, okay, in London. And he married a young lady, and he wanted, if you look in the first column there, the bridegroom, who is studying for the clergy, I'm in the middle, attends the Tree of Life College and was desirous of being married in the strictest Orthodox Jewish manner. He therefore chose what is known as a Hasidish wedding. This is distinguished by its special rites, which consist of strictly Jewish Orthodox ceremony. Women were separated from men during the ceremony. Long sleeve dresses only were allowed to be worn. Men and women were not allowed to dance together. One young girl, the groom's 18-year-old sister, ignorant of the solemnity of the occasion, invited several friends for dancing after dinner. They had a rude shock. Okay? And he goes on, he talks more about it. He talks about the mitzvah dance that they did, where the bride and groom danced throughout, holding a handkerchief. A special interest was the music, which was of a traditional type, in which the men chanted. The wedding attended by many leading rabbis, including the headmaster and the students of the Tree of Life College. And one person says there, "This is the first time we've seen a wedding like this since 1901. Oh well, there you are. But that's a little snapshot of life in the East End of London in the 1930s. But as you can see from the sources, there are two legitimate approaches, at least two, and it's a very interesting topic. Next week, we will go on to other things, but I thought we needed a little bit of mixed dancing, or mixed seating or other, or just a discussion of that, not mixed dancing, in order to bring us back down from Mashiach, and next week we go on to other topics. Be'ezrat Hashem.